So good to see everyone today. So often, I have come to realize it is not the trial, it isn't the context I'm dealing with, it's not the people involved, it is simply the case that there is a lack of power. The lack of power to deal with the storm at hand, the lack of power to have the discernment to know what to do, the lack of power to follow through with the commitment, the lack of power to deal with evil people, the lack of power to overcome, and the lack of power to defeat my human nature. The title of the message today is Power To. Power To. The power to fight against Satan, the power to overcome temptation, the power to overcome myself. Because the flesh is very powerful, the carnality that we all have. It never goes away. It's there. Sometimes it is submerged. Sometimes we get on top of it. Other times we don't. It is the power to complete a difficult task and not give up. It is the power not to give in to my human emotions, but instead to follow the leadership of God's Spirit. It is the power that is often lacking. It is the power to fulfill my vows. It is the power not to cave, not to get discouraged in the midst of a storm. It is the power not to be overwhelmed by evil people. God promises us power. I think we forget that. It is an element of God's Spirit, but we must understand, and it's taken me years to come to appreciate this, and it's something that I continually forget. Power from God is not automatic. Power from God is not automatic. It has to be pursued. It has to be nurtured. It has to be sought after. It has to be requested for time and again, because it isn't natural to human beings. Most human beings, to a great extent, are enslaved by their human weaknesses, their laziness, their periods of doubt and self-pity, their periods of mental confusion, periods of caring too much of what other people think. We're just flesh. We're weak. You know, even Jesus Christ said to his disciples on that night, just prior to him being led off to be beaten and crucified, he said, "The spirit is willing, but the flesh is so weak." I've had to deal with that. I had to deal with that on several occasions this week, where simply it was a case of my lack, or should I say, the fact that I forgot that I have to go to God for more power. I need to go to God on a more consistent basis for power. There is something about the power that God can give that goes to the inner man that you cannot get anywhere else. You can't get it through human effort. You can't get it through self-discipline or self-will. And self-discipline is a good thing, and human effort is a good thing as well. The problem with it, it's not enough. I need God's power that strengthens me in the inner man. I need to remember what it says in Zechariah chapter 4 and verse 6, that not by might, but by God's Spirit are things that are accomplished. Whether those be the little things in our lives, or whether it be dealing with a context where we find ourselves overwhelmed with problems, it is the power of God that is often lacking. The good news about the message today is that God will so readily give us his power, but it must be requested, it must be taken more seriously, and it is never automatic with God. Now, I have a measure of God's Spirit, so there's some power there, but there are times, many times, I need even greater power to be able to deal with everything that I have to deal with. And the same, of course, applies with you. No better example of this is found than in the book of Mark. Let's go to the book of Mark. This tremendous story, I think one of the most important stories in terms of faith and power, what power can do, why it's so important and how to get it. It's found in Mark chapter 9. Because the disciples had been around Jesus Christ. As a matter of fact, Jesus Christ gave them power to cast out demons. And they went about the countryside and they would heal the sick and they would cast out demons. But then they ran up against an obstacle which was much bigger than they were. It was a young man who was demon-possessed, and this was a particularly powerful, ruthless, brutal spirit. And frankly, the demon was too powerful for them. And that demonic spirit was a bit more astute, a bit more discerning, and that spirit being could sense, even in the disciples, that they didn't have enough power. You know, the more astute spirit beings can sense in us the degree of power that is at hand. I don't think we glow with it, but they just discern it. There's something there that even a smart demon, and demons vary in their intelligence and personalities and their abilities, but some of the smarter ones, some of the more vicious ones, to be quite frank, can discern whether you're weak or strong in terms of God's spirit. So where do you stand right now? Where's your power meter? If 10 being the most powerful, being an incredible amount of power in your life right now, but I was thinking about this week, what is the level of my power this week? Well, Tuesday and Wednesday and in the beginning of the week, that level of power really wasn't that strong. I'd been traveling, I was a little bit tired, I had to go to New York City, I had problems with the flight, had issues that happened within New York City, but it started to suck the life out of me. And life can quickly drain your spiritual battery. It only takes half a day or a couple of bad incidents back to back, and all of a sudden you feel a draining in the power. So would you be high power right now or lower power? And I think we could all assess ourselves pretty accurately regarding that. As the week went on and I was able to get closer to God and spend more time, you can even sense that that power starts to become restored. But let's get back to this incredible story, because I want to go into it in much greater detail today, because it's so very important. It is discussed in the book of Mark, chapter 9. It's discussed also in Matthew, chapter 17. We'll go to that as well. It's also discussed in the book of Luke because it's so important. At verse 14 of Mark chapter 9, it says, when he came to the disciples, he saw a great multitude around them, and the disciples were disputing. Jesus Christ had come off the Temple Mount earlier, probably the day before. He had made his way back into town, and now he found the other disciples, and he met up with them. And there was a problem here because the disciples could not cast out this demon from this young man. It was a case of lack of power. And immediately when they saw him, all the people were greatly amazed and they ran to him. Verse 16, and he asked the scribes, what are you discussing? So even the scribes were there. There was quite an audience at hand. Verse 17, and the one of the crowd answered and said, teacher, I brought you my son who has a mute spirit. So the spirit was so powerful that apparently it was difficult for this individual to function. He couldn't speak. Demons can even tie up the tongue. They can create a deafness. In this particular case, it was so powerful it had the ability to take this young individual, throw him down, literally throw him down, to the point that he foamed at the mouth. He gnashed his teeth. He would become rigid. And how often this would happen, we don't know, but you could only imagine the nightmare. Then again, probably we cannot imagine the nightmare to have somebody you love who is demon-possessed, and from time to time they just totally lose control and do all types of things and could hurt other people, could hurt themselves. This is horrific. In verse 18, he said, I spoke to your disciples that they should cast him out, but they could not. So they tried to cast out the demon. But in this particular case, they were not successful. So I think even the disciples' confidence, their faith, had been rattled. Because in other contexts, and you could read this in Luke and in Mark and Matthew, they were able to cast out demons, but not in this case. Because they came up against something that was a little bit too big for them at this particular time. And they had to learn some lessons yet. And in verse 19, Jesus Christ is frustrated. I think he's discouraged, but he's angry. You'll see this as well, that sometimes he gets angry with us because of our lack of faith and lack of power. Because that power and that faith is there if it is sought out, but the problem is we don't seek it out as often as we should and with the zeal and with the energy that we should, because we can have more power. In verse 19, he answered, and he said to them, "O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him to me." He's angry. You get into the original language, there's a lot of anger here. And they brought the young man to Jesus Christ, and he saw him, and immediately the spirit convulsed him, and he fell on the ground, wallowed, foaming at the mouth. Very frightening to see this. In verse 21, he asked his father, "How long has this been happening to him?" And he said, "From his childhood." We don't know how old he was. My guess, and that's all I can do is guess here, he's probably in his early 20s, maybe. 22, 23, 24, 25. How many years had this been going on? You talk about a trial, that is a trial. In verse 22, "And often he has thrown him both into the fire and into the water." So not only does he break out into this horrific seizure and foams at the mouth, at times he will try to throw himself into a fire. At other times he will try to throw himself into the water. This is frightening. The first time I ever had to deal with somebody who had a demon problem when I was new in the ministry was a man. He was down in his basement and he was taking a lighter to himself and burning himself with the lighter. Just take the lighter and burn himself. I was very young. I knew what the stories said about this, but it's very sobering because you realize what you're dealing with here. That presence that is afflicting that individual and tormenting that person to drive them to do something like this. It's frightening when you come across it for the very first time. So you can imagine what is taking place here and how frightening this had to be. Well, this is important, so I need to go back to verse 22. "And often he has thrown him," the father is speaking now, "both into the fire and into the water to destroy him." This is what the man says in the original language. Some translations capture it better than others. But the man, the father, says, "But if you are able to," not knowing who he is really talking to. He doesn't understand how powerful Jesus Christ is, or that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, the Messiah. He doesn't realize the power there, because Christ is filled literally with power. So he says, "But if you're able to," and of course he's desperate, "can you do anything? Have compassion on us and help us." And Jesus said to him, and Jesus is a bit angry, and his tone is responsive to the man and to the audience, including the disciples as well, because he's upset with people. And he answers in this way. He says, "If I can, of course I can." That's the tone of the conversation. You're asking me if the power is here. And of course I'm able to do these things. But he said, "What about you? If you can believe, all things are possible to him who believes." And immediately the father of the child cried out to Jesus Christ with tears. And he said, "Lord, I believe, help my unbelief." At least he's honest. And Christ responds to the honesty. So there's a little bit of belief, but it's very weak. And Jesus saw the people and they came running together. And he rebuked the unclean spirit. And he said to it, "Deaf and dumb spirit." So it made the young man both deaf and dumb. He wasn't able to hear properly. He wasn't able to speak. "I command you, come out of him and enter him no more." So it was important that he was commanded not to enter anymore. And the spirit cried out, and it convulsed him greatly, came out of him, and he became as one dead. And many actually thought that he was dead and said that he's dead. And Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. And when he had come into the house, his disciples asked him privately, "Why could we not cast it out?" And Jesus Christ simply, plainly said to them, "This kind cannot come out except by prayer." Some translations add fasting. Clearly in the original, the great emphasis is on prayer. It's very simple, really. Had you been close to God, and they were not, I think they had success in casting out other spirits, but this was very different. They needed more power. The power wasn't there to the degree it should have been because they simply were not close to God in prayer. Lesson here is very simple. Greater power comes with extra time on your knees before God. Not a little bit more prayer, a lot of prayer. The power is there, but you're not going to work it up on your own. You're not going to exhibit more self-effort somehow. We're talking about a power that goes beyond self-effort. We're talking about a power that comes from God's Spirit, and it comes only as we have contact with Him, as we have more contact with Him, as our prayer lives are intensified, and we increase the time. Because in this age where we try shortcuts and there are hacks, you know, you go on the computer and you can find out how to hack this or hack that, which is a word to describe how to do things quickly. And I like looking at all those things on the computer. You know, if I can clean my house quicker, great. If I can get through a computer problem faster and I want to know all these computer hacks, wonderful. But in a relationship with God, there are no hacks. You cannot replace it with some gimmick, some speed gimmick. It takes time. And this is one of the chief reasons why Jesus Christ was constantly filled with power, because you see again and again and again, he gives us this clear example. He would often withdraw himself to a private place, and there he reestablished that connection with the Father, and that level of power was maintained. So it is often true we lack power, not because we're not dedicated, not because we don't believe, not because we don't want to do things right. It is simply a case that this world takes us away from time on our knees. It's that simple. Staying close to God requires work, work on our knees. It requires you to set aside those times, sometimes to block even greater amounts of time to remedy those periods in our lives when we're not close to God. So the fight that we fight is the fight to stay close to God, because when the closeness is there, then the power is there. And then we're able to fight Satan much more effectively. We're able to see more clearly, because I'm going to be talking about even the power to see more clearly what to do, what to do next as you seek out to make a very important decision in your life. Often it is a power issue, because when you're close to God, He gives you the power to see more clearly. You know, it's like for me, if I want that power to make a decision to see clearly what I need to do, well, I have to put on those glasses, then I can see more sharply. But it takes time. You see this again and again and again and again. We're to draw close to Him. It is much more than a cliche or some type of a ritual. It's not some religious act or habit. It is a matter of power that God only gives to us when we're close to Him in prayer. No other way. Now, if you go to Matthew chapter 17, let's take a look at the story in Matthew chapter 17. He brings out some other details in Matthew chapter 17. So the focus today is not so much on demon possession. That's a bit of the backstory here, but I want to focus on the power that is needed. Even faith is a type of power, when you think about it. It's a level of conviction. In verse 14 of Matthew 17, when they had come to the multitude, a man came to him, kneeling down to him and saying, so here we see that the man is kneeling in front of him, Lord, have mercy on my son. He's an epileptic. He suffers severely, for he often falls into the fire and often into the water. You know, what do you do with somebody like this? Can you watch this person 24 hours a day? I'm sure there were times in the middle of the night or in the morning when that child just escaped and tried to jump into the water or harm himself. A horrible way to live. And verse 16, so I brought him to your disciples, but they could not cure him. And Jesus answered and said, O faithless, perverse generation. He's angry. How long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him here to me. Because you see, the problem here is they could have had the faith. I do believe sometimes God gets angry with me, and this verse would actually apply to me. I'm not talking about dedication here, okay? Don't confuse dedication with levels of faith and spiritual power. You can be very dedicated, but low in power and low in faith. Because there are times I believe I've been very dedicated, but I haven't been as close to God as I should be. So that power will simply leave me quickly because it's not renewed as strongly and consistently and with diligence as it should be. We live in a very aggressive world. This world will do everything it can to get you off your knees, distract you away from prayer. It will do everything it can to overwhelm you with too many details, too many things, too many materialistic concerns, where that spiritual element of prayer just grinds to a halt. So he's angry because it could have been different. Those disciples could have had the power. They had no excuse. They had been around him a long time. They had seen him pray many times because that was his example. But they failed to do it. They thought it would be automatic just because they were one of his disciples. And even though he did give them initially power, they failed to renew that power, as it were. So, verse 18, Jesus rebuked the demon. It came out of him, and the child was cured from that very hour. And the disciples came to Jesus Christ privately, and they said, why couldn't we cast it out? They did try, but it was simply a lack of power. Because that demon discerned those men didn't have the power. And Jesus said unto them, because of your unbelief, because your faith was soft, it was thin, it was mushy, it was desiccated, whatever word you want to use, we know when our faith is weak. See, even faith is never to be taken for granted. It has to be nurtured. It has to be protected. It has to be restored. It has to be refreshed and replenished. The primary way to do that is through that experience of taking that time, and it does take time to get on our knees. It says because of your unbelief, because you haven't been close. And I say to you, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you will say to the mountain, move here and go there, and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you. These are shocking statements, even for us today, to read these things. And don't minimize anything he says here. Sometimes our requests are not granted. Situations are not navigated through effectively. Overcoming comes to a halt. Promises are not kept. We are given in to our own weaknesses simply because we lack power, which is readily available. But you have to spend time with the Father in heaven and Jesus Christ at his right hand, and then the power comes. But it takes time. We all know that from experience. 5 minutes of prayer a day is not enough. Doesn't work. Now, of course, there's a time for the fast prayer, and God is not against that. There are times when we don't have time to pray at length. God understands that. But also understand the example is of Jesus Christ, who was constantly looking to maintain that level of power and faith to a very high degree, and he simply did that through prayer. There's a wonderful story in the book of Nehemiah. Let's go there, Nehemiah chapter 6, where Nehemiah is in the midst of a battle. He's in the midst of a storm. He's trying to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. It's difficult, very difficult task. There are enemies all about giving him trouble. He has the Jewish community, which he's got to deal with. He's got the leadership in the Jewish community, which are giving him a bit of grief at times. There were other problems in the land. It was one of those periods of life, you know, where you say there's one thing after another, after another, after another. And Nehemiah was feeling overwhelmed. It's not a sin to feel overwhelmed. We're human beings. We're puny, little human beings that don't have much power. And we have to recognize we need to go to God more often, seeking out that power. So we're cutting into the middle of the story. He's right in the middle of the storm here in chapter 6 in verse 1. Now it happened when Sanballat and Tobiah, Geshem the Arab, and the rest of our enemies heard that I had rebuilt the wall and that there were no breaks left in the wall, although I had not yet hung on the doors of the gate, that Sanballat and Geshem sent to me, saying, "Come, let us meet together among the villages in the plain of Ono." But they thought to do me harm. So they're always trying to get him to meet. And be careful of meetings. You don't know what they're going to do to you in a meeting. There's a lot of truth in that. Not all meetings are wrong, but sometimes maybe they're going to try to put you into a corner somehow. And Esau, through it, Nehemiah was a wise man. And in verse 3, "So I sent messengers to them, saying, 'I'm doing a great work, that I cannot come down. Why should the work of God cease while I leave it and go down to meet with you?'" Excellent. He wasn't going to be off task here. Now verse 4, "They sent me this message 4 times. We need to meet, we need to meet. And I answered them in the same manner. Then Sanballat sent his servant to me, as before, the 5th time, with an open letter in his hand. And it was written," so he's trying to bully him. He's trying to bully him. "It is reported among the nations, and Geshem says that you and the Jews plan to rebel." They weren't rebelling. "And according to the rumors, you are rebuilding the wall that may be your king. So you're trying to rebel by building these walls." And verse 7, "And you have also appointed prophets to proclaim concerning you at Jerusalem, saying there's a king in Judah." So you're going to proclaim yourself king. Nehemiah, this is the rumor. So these evil men were going to spread this rumor, and it would get back to the leadership in Persia. So he's overwhelmed. He has a lot on his plate for sure. And verse 8, "Then I sent to him, saying, 'No such things as you say are being done. This is all a falsehood. But you invent them in your heart. For they all were trying to make us afraid, saying their hands will be weakened in the work, and it will not be done.'" Satan will, you know, sometimes try to do this with us. We try to do something good and right, something that is pleasing to God, and Satan will try to weaken the effort. Here's the key in verse 9 at the very end. "Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands." Very simple prayer. I'm in the middle of this storm. Please strengthen my hand. Because God doesn't always deliver from the storm. Sometimes he does. But other times he simply will strengthen us. But it is never to be assumed. It is never to be taken for granted. It is not automatic, but there's a great lesson here. There's simply times you get down on your knees, you cry out to God, and you say, "Strengthen my hands." You know, as was brought out in the sermonette, we don't have a fickle God. We don't have a fair weather friend. He is always there. He never gives up on us. Even though all around it seems like we're almost drowning, if we say to God, "Strengthen my hands," he will strengthen us. That is what he does. That's the God we have, the one who strengthens. And it's something that's very important because we need the power to get through the storm. You need the power to fight against Satan, as we saw in Mark chapter 9 and Matthew chapter 17, because we don't wrestle against flesh and blood. And Satan will try to upset us and discourage us. We need the power to overcome temptation. We need the power to complete a task. Sometimes we just have to follow through and complete a duty, a task, which is very, very difficult to complete. And I think of this scripture, which I've gone to many times over the past few months. So this will be somewhat redundant, but it's so important to understand this. Go to Luke chapter 22. Luke chapter 22, "Give me the strength to fulfill the duty I have." Luke chapter 22. And I love this and have come to appreciate it so very much. Luke chapter 22, speaking of Jesus Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he's struggling, and he knows that he has to go through with this horrific beating, the shame, the humiliation, the total loneliness of the experience, because nobody was going to be there with him. He was alone. then the crucifixion itself, painful, humiliating, beaten, scourged, horrific ordeal. And he's praying. And in verse 40, he says to his disciples, pray that you may not enter into temptation. Because we often cave to temptation because the power is lacking. But had we only prayed more, we wouldn't have fallen to the temptation. If I give in to my temper, it's because I'm not close enough to God and the power isn't there to give in to my temper or give in to some other work of the flesh, because the power isn't there. I cannot walk and defeat the flesh through my own power. Now, verse 41, he withdrew from them a stone's throw, and he knelt down and he prayed. He was constantly going to God for power. He was in the flesh. Just because he was the Son of God, that power wasn't taken for granted. He did all things because of that relationship with the Father. He said in John 5, in verse 30, I can do nothing of myself. That wasn't a cliche. He literally meant that. I can do nothing of myself. He was able to do everything he did through the power of God because he stayed close to the Father. Okay, let's pick it up in verse 42. Father, if it is your will, take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. He's in agony of mind. He needed strength in the inner man. It wasn't so much a physical strength, though I'm sure he was depleted and exhausted by the heavy cloud that hung over him. But he had to be physically exhausted that evening. Stress can just bring you to your knees. You're so stressed, you're exhausted. You're so stressed, sometimes you can't sleep. It makes it even more difficult. And then verse 43, this wonderful passage, which is only written down here in the book of Luke. Now, verse 43, then an angel appeared to him from heaven, strengthening Jesus Christ, because he was in the flesh and he needed to be strengthened. There's never any shame. There's never any embarrassment to go down before God on your knees, even with tears, and say, I need to be strengthened. I am not Superman here. You know, the world portrays in its movies and its books and biographies these supermen and women. No such thing. Those are illusions. I understand. I love a good biography. And you can read about certain men who had great qualities, and it's true, they had their strengths. Nobody's a Superman. We all have weaknesses. Boy, it doesn't take long for the human being to become very weak. It doesn't take long for somebody who is known for their bravery to lose heart, because God can put us into a context, or Satan can sift us as wheat, and all of a sudden all that natural courage flies out the window within a matter of a half a day. You don't find in the scripture God constantly telling humans to make themselves strong. Now, yes, there's a human element where in the Proverbs and in the Psalms, you have a responsibility to not be easy on yourself, not to coddle yourself. That is true. But really, the great emphasis is constantly going to God for strength. And this is what Jesus Christ did. And the Apostle Paul had to learn to do this. And there's no shame in doing this, because even Jesus Christ had to be strengthened to be able to carry out the task at hand. Sometimes you just have to carry out the task at hand, and it requires strength. But it's strength in the inner man. It's a strength of mind. It's affirming of the emotions. It's an inner core. It's a wonderful thing, but it comes only by praying to God and staying close to God. So we have these great examples. Sometimes strength is defined by clarity. Now, you may not have thought of it that way, but it's true. Because we often battle with trying to know what to do, what decisions to make. And often, as you're counseling people, that this is what they're battling with. what to do. Should they get involved with a person? What about a business decision? What about moving? What about this or what about that? Very good questions. And they're battling constantly. I was listening to a cluster of old radio programs, which, God willing, I'm going to pick and choose from probably about 20 different radio programs and do a little cut and pasting, because I'm not looking for the whole of the program, but just sections of the program where Mr. Herbert Armstrong talks about faith and how he worked through trials in life regarding faith and scriptures that come to mind. And some of these radio messages are just good old-fashioned, plain, outstanding. Because you will hear things in those radio programs I've never heard him say in sermons. I've never seen him written in his co-worker letters or in the autobiography. So I'll strip it down to a degree. I'll give it to Barry, and then I'll ask Barry to strip it some more and put it together so you can have it on CD, and then you can listen to what he had to say. A lot of it has to do with faith and how to remain strong, how to strengthen the weak hands when those hands are weak, and we all have our days, our months when we have weak hands because we are weak. We have weak hands because we are weak. Sometimes truths that are obvious are not so obvious. Strength comes from outside ourselves. The strength to overcome, the strength to make changes, the strength to have a more positive mind. It's difficult to have a positive mind in this world. Very difficult. Very easy to be negative, overwhelmed, bitter, angry, cynical. Very, very easy, because it's all around us. It's in the movies. It's in the magazines. I was in New York City visiting my aunt for Thanksgiving, kind of an early Thanksgiving. She's 93 years of age, so she was very active in life, lived a very full life. But now it's difficult for her to get around, so hard for her to walk. I mean, we'll go for walks in the city. She's right in the heart of Manhattan, which is very interesting. I always find it interesting going there. But she can't do much, so often what we will do in the evenings, she's got a large bedroom, and she'll watch TV, and we'll watch TV. And she loves the news, and she'll watch the news for 3-4 hours, you know. That's what we do in the evenings. Let me tell you, after watching the news for 3 or 4 hours, watching MSNBC and CNN, I'm ready for a brain operation. After a couple hours of that, and the negativity that just comes out, just show after show after show. And I said to her, I said, maybe we get some international news. Because somehow if I watch international news and all the negativity going on in Europe and the Middle East, I can handle that better. It's over there. It's interesting. This stuff over here, anyway, back to the story, it's so negative. I just found myself so drained. Had to find an excuse. There's a Whole Foods up the street. It was 10 o'clock at night. Whole Foods doesn't close till 11. I said, I got to run and get something at Whole Foods. I got to get out of here. And I got to get a mental break. Because this world will suck any positiveness out of you within a matter of hours or a half a day. It's all around us. Try to find a movie that's relatively uplifting, that has a good ending. It's very difficult. You know, listening to Herbert Armstrong and all these radio programs, hundreds of them, and reading what he wrote, he was an unusual person in different ways. But one of the ways he was quite unusual was he was a positive person. I'm not talking about happy, happy, I'm happy all the time, happy, happy. I don't mean that. He wasn't chirpy, okay? Nothing wrong if you're chirpy. But he was a positive person. There was always goals he was reaching for. There was always energy. There was a sense of urgency. It takes a lot of power to maintain a sense of urgency. But he fought for that. He grabbed a hold of it. You see this in his coworker letters. You see this on the radio programs. Now, I could tell some of the programs, I could tell when he was a little down or tired, you know, because you listen to enough of them. You can sense he goes down a couple of notches in terms of the delivery of the radio program or the topic at hand, because he was just a human being. But he was an unusual man. He was positive. And it doesn't mean that he was naive to the trials of life, because he went through them, but I have a deep respect for people who are positive people because it is hard to be a positive person. It is just plain vanilla hard. But if you can do that and work on that, and you can with the power of God's Spirit, even negativity can be overcome. Anything, mountains can be moved when God's power is in play. And he says it repeatedly throughout the gospel accounts. You can move mountains. It was a Jewish expression that meant you can do what seems to be impossible. Sometimes what seems to be impossible is to change the human mind. It is perhaps in many ways one of the greatest miracles of all, to take a negative mind and then change that person where they are a positive person. To take somebody who has a lazy mind and all of a sudden they become a hard worker. To take somebody who's cutting and sharp-tongued and cynical and critical and all of a sudden they turn into somebody who is encouraging, somebody who is uplifting, somebody who strengthens others. And these things happen. But you have to want the power. But if you want the power, you have to spend the time. Because what I'm talking about today, there are no hacks. There are no shortcuts. You have to spend more time on your knees. So that's easy, but then again, it's not so easy, is it? It's a simple solution, and the solution is simple. The solution to more power is simple, but it's not easy. Okay, why don't we do a little bit of a test here that only you will answer the test. So next Sabbath, you come to church. So right now, determine over the next week how much time you will spend on your knees every day. However you define that. Now, if you have a health problem, obviously, you may not be able to get on your knees, but you know what I mean. So if it's X amount of time in prayer, it's X amount of time, and you stick with that every day. See, next Sabbath, if you can come to church and you can fulfill that little promise you make to yourself right now. If it's 30 minutes a day, if it's 45 minutes a day, or if you want to include Bible study in that, set a time right now and see how hard it is to show up next week and say to yourself, I stuck to my schedule every day. I didn't miss a day. Because it's Satan's world and he's going to do everything he can to get you off your knees. Because if he can get us off our knees, eventually we'll cave either to temptation, anger, bad decisions, lack of interest in the church, whatever it may be. Eventually all those things will begin to slip away. But the good news is power is there and God wants to give us that power because he loves us. And we're told in 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7 that God gives to us the spirit of power, love, and a sound mind. We don't focus much on power. We know it exists. It's very real. It's a state of mind. It's a different mind. You know when you're doing something and you have a lot of confidence, maybe at work, in your area where you have confidence, you know what a spirit of power is, right? You can speak with power because there's a confidence there. God does not want his children to be filled with broken confidence. I told you what Herbert Armstrong said, and I remember this because I was in the Imperial Gymnasium when he said it. He came down to the church, the Imperial, it was either AM or PM service. This was when I was first in the church. There were about 700 or 800 people down in the Imperial Gym across the freeway in Pasadena. And he said, the worst thing you can do to another human being is to destroy their confidence. I don't know if that's the worst thing you can do. It may be the worst thing you can do. And of course, you love your children. You would never want to do anything that would destroy their confidence. You want to strengthen their confidence. But it's a challenge because we don't want people to become arrogant. God hates arrogance. But a quiet confidence is a wonderful thing. Call it faith, a certain strength. You want your children to have that. He wants us to have it, but we have to go to Him to get it. But the power is readily available. So God wants you to have more power. He wants you to have more love, and a sound mind is a very calm, steady mind. You know, regardless of what's going on in the waves and the winds of life, those rare individuals are very steady. Yes, Mr. Carlson, and I don't mean to make him feel uncomfortable, but he has a gift in that. Now, he probably works on it, but it is a gift. Fundamentally, it is a gift that is there. But you can have any of those attributes. You can have the attribute of power. But Herbert Armstrong, I think, had a naturally positive mind, but God strengthened him in that. But he would go to his knees often and ask for power and strength. And you see this in the co-worker letters, especially in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, when the church was forming and there were a lot of trials and so on. We truly don't understand. We underestimate. We deeply underappreciate the power that is there. Because if we did appreciate it more, if we understood it better, we would spend much more time on our knees. And then the power would be given. And it's wonderful. So forget for a moment the circumstance or the trial or the storm. And God often will deliver us in time from those things. Is it not a wonderful state of mind to be in the middle of a storm and you're not afraid? To be in the middle of a trial and have great faith, knowing that those waves will eventually calm down? Isn't it wonderful not to be in the grips of enormous stress, so much stress you can't even sleep at night? The power is there. I don't think Jesus Christ, maybe he had one night he couldn't sleep because of stress. Maybe that last night when he prayed all night. But aside from that, I don't believe there was ever any other night he didn't sleep. But we have a man who was filled with the power of God. But he was filled with the power of God because he was so close to God. So I was taking a look at the subject of vows and covenant. I hope, God willing, I can give a message on covenant, because the Bible talks so much about covenants and vows. I'm reading about David's life and all these vows and covenants, and I was thinking about covenants and vows. You know, the problem with covenants and vows, and they are wonderful things, especially covenants like a marriage covenant, is that people enter into marriage covenants, and most people have to face a hard reality at a point in time in their marriage, that it's really hard to live up to your marriage vows. If you're a woman, submission is not always easy. If you're a man, to love your wife, to be attentive to her needs, to be aware of her needs, not cave into all of her needs, but to be aware and sensitive to her needs, as Christ is to the church, these are incredibly high standards, and it requires strength, great power to fulfill those vows. In the world, they just, usually most people just walk away from it because it becomes all too difficult. The power is there, and it's readily available. So let's take a look at some of those scriptures about the inner man. We took a look at 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7. It's there. Timothy was afraid because Paul was going to be killed. It was a time of great persecution. It was a heavy time of stress in the church. And Paul reminded Timothy, don't forget that you have God's Spirit, but you have to stir it up as well. And God can strengthen you through that. So the power I'm talking about is not necessarily physical power. It could be, but that's really not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that mental strength, that energy of the zeal. It's kind of an inner force that is not you. This is something that is not you. It's a sense of clarity and weight, mental weight that you have. Punch, drive, thrust, boldness is a good word that comes as a result of God's Spirit. Now, Philippians chapter 4 and verse 13, how many years have I read this to the point of it becoming dull in my mind? You know, there are some scriptures you hear so often through its use of maybe you hear it too many times. Not that you should think that way, but you just hear it so many times. Philippians 4 and verse 13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But it requires that close contact in prayer. So whatever the situation you're in, even wisdom is a type of power, is it not? When you're looking to navigate through a very difficult decision and you need wisdom, and on the CD of these radio programs, I'll include what Mr. Herbert Armstrong said about wisdom, because he felt in his early years that he lacked it horribly. And he would pray and pray and pray to God for wisdom. That when you have wisdom and you know how to handle a situation, there is a confidence that comes with that that is beautiful. There is a confidence that comes with clarity of knowing what to do, which is wonderful. This is probably one of the most repeated questions that ministers get. I'm in this context of situation. What do you think I should do? It could be marriage, it could be job, it could be where to move. Should I get involved in this situation? What should I do? These are all good questions and important questions. So let's go to Luke chapter 6. I know I'm jumping back and forth a little bit here, but let's go to Luke chapter 6. The reason I bring this to your attention is because yesterday I'm listening to one of these radio programs, which is just outstanding, and he's talking how even Jesus Christ, because he was in the flesh, needed clarity, and the way Jesus Christ was able to get that clarity and bring things into focus, because he was in the flesh, he had to go through that experience of not being 100% sure of what to do, but because he was human, not lacking, but he was a human, went through the process I'm about to read to you, because he was in the flesh and was in all points tempted as we are. And this is the example, and this is how he got clarity in verse 12. Luke chapter 6 and verse 12, and it came to pass in those days, he went out to the mountain to pray, and he continued all night in prayer, probably hours, because he had to make a very big decision. And when it was day, he called his disciples to himself, and from them he chose 12, whom he also named apostles. He had to also choose a man called Judas. He needed wisdom. He needed insight. He wanted the Father's mind on the topic. He conversed with the Father all night. What should I do? Who should I choose? He loved all these people who followed him. And they're all very dedicated, but there were a certain 12. And these 12 were not more superior than everybody else. They certainly had their weaknesses. But he wanted God's direction. So he spends all night, and then he chooses them. A very simple truth, but in our busy world, we can forget this. When you make these big decisions, spend a night in prayer. Or spend all of Sunday morning or Sunday from 1 o'clock till Sunday till 7 or 8 o'clock in prayer and in Bible study. Of course you can do that. Of course I can do that. We'll go to the movies for several hours. We'll go visit friends or relatives for hours. We can always find the time to get away, use a larger block of time where you spend 3, 4, 5, 6 hours. You just pray. You may not even put the concern or the fear or the goal or the desire in front of you initially. You just start to go to the scriptures. Guide me, God, as I study. Direct my mind. And through the process of time, it doesn't say that in the first hour he was ready to choose. And this is what Mr. Armstrong brings out in this incredible radio program. He talks about how Christ went about the decision-making process. Because I want my decisions over the next 12 months to be wiser, whether it's where we keep the feasts this year. You can pray about that. not my will be done, but as we seek where God wants it to be, and other decisions I have to make about radio programs and publications and all of these things, I want God's involvement. But if I don't isolate that time and block it off, I am not going to have the power that comes from clarity. When you see things clearly, you have power. You know, in the world of business, it could be computers, expertise in the oil industry, whatever job you do, there are people in your field who are experts and they get top dollar because of their experience as consultants, because they have so much experience. You can hire them for $2,500, $3,000, $5,000, $7,000 for a day. Because you got a problem, XYZ, you bring them into your company, and all day they spend working on the problem because they're that good, because they are experts. So you're going to God because you're looking for that expertise, but it takes time. It is a process. God's not in a rush. We're going to have those times when our prayers are rushed because of the world we live in. God knows that. But if that is our pattern, if your pattern is that of rushed prayers, you're not going to have that contact where God's going to give you more of His Spirit. So when you make those major decisions, and it's a matter of power, you spend time, and then the power comes, the power to see clearly. What a wonderful God we have. Okay, a couple of closing scriptures that I think are very encouraging. So let's go to Psalm 22. I know what I've said today is very simple, and it is easy to understand. But taking that time out is up to you. You have to do that. You have to, and this is important too, you have to help your spouse with this because they need time to be able to do this. Women need time. Men need time. We need to be sensitive to that. Go to Psalm 22. At verse 19. Now in verse 1, you know, David is saying, "Oh my God, why have you forsaken me?" In verse 19, he says, "You, O Lord, do not be far from me. O my strength," God is called my strength. He didn't rely on his human strength. Human strength is not wrong. It's just very limited. "Hasten to help me." And sometimes that is the prayer I pray. "Hasten to help me. I've wrestled with this long enough. I'm overwhelmed. I need to make a decision. Hasten to help me. Quickly help me." It's a good prayer. But prior to praying that prayer, you have to be putting in the time. You've got to be putting in the time. And then the "hasten to help me," that's going to carry much more weight with God. Psalm 46. Let's go to Psalm 46. Verse 1. "God is our refuge, and God is my strength, a very present help in trouble." We sing these psalms, don't we? And they're wonderful. But sometimes in the singing, we can quickly forget because we're on to the next stanza. Very true about him. But it takes time. You have to reconnect. And relationships take time. You know that. It just takes time with God. And God will give you the time. So find the time beginning tomorrow. Don't wait. Don't wait another 24 hours. Either get up early or find time in the afternoon and begin the process where you spend that extra time and the power will come. Ephesians 3 and verse 16 is a spectacular scripture. And I'll close with this, Ephesians 3:16. So we're talking about spiritual things today. We're talking about the inner man. We're talking about the mind. We're talking about a strength and stability of mind. Ephesians 3, verse 16. This is an incredible scripture. You know, of all the epistles of Paul, I heard Mr. Armstrong say the book of Ephesians was his favorite. Heard him say that one time. Ephesians 3 and verse 16. Oh, that he would grant you according to the riches of his glory. God will give you these things, the strength of the mind, to be strengthened with might. It's not a cliche, it's not soft poetry. Strengthened with might through his Spirit in the inner man, that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. Go to God, spend that extra time, request the power to, whatever that is, the power to overcome, the power to see clearly, the power to follow through on a promise, the power to get through a storm, the power to deal with evil people, whatever the power that is needed, then request the power, and he will give you that power when that relationship with him has been strengthened. So may God bless you and give you the power to. I hope Zoom was okay this week. And from time to time, we may have problems, but we hope to Zoom just about every week. Pete Peterson is the local man here who's setting it up, so if he can't make it to church, if something were to happen, then we might not be able to do it. But from time to time, we're just going to have technical difficulties. So we appreciate, I know it's difficult because we're trying to coordinate all this together. I did want to mention I am going to begin again my series, continue in the book of Mark. I've been recording into a new sound system, and I just haven't been able to get the sound exactly the way I want. So that's why I'm so delayed. It's a technical thing, but I think I'm just going to put it out. The sound's not horrible in the recording. It's just not quite as good as I wanted it to be. So we should be able to get that back to you in the book of Mark here and get going on that again, which one of the upcoming studies I'll actually be talking about Jesus Christ and how he dealt with the world of demons. That is a heavy topic in the book of Mark. So we'll begin to do that again. Have a good Sabbath.